Random House Audio presents 61 Hours by Lee Child, read for you by Dick Hill. For my editor, the one and only Kate Misiak. Chapter 1. 5 minutes to 3 in the afternoon, exactly 61 hours before it happened. The lawyer drove in and parked in the empty lot. There was an inch of new snow on the ground, so he spent a minute fumbling in the footwell until his overshoes were secure. Then he got out and turned his collar up and walked to the visitor's entrance. There was a bitter wind out of the north. It was thick with fat, lazy flakes. There was a storm 60 miles away. The radio had been full of it. The lawyer got in through the door and stamped the snow off his feet. There was no line. It was not a regular visiting day. There was nothing ahead of him except an empty room and an empty X-ray belt and a metal detector hoop and 3 prison guards standing around doing nothing. He nodded to them, even though he didn't know them, but he considered himself on their side and they on his. Prison was a binary world. Either you were locked up or you weren't. They weren't. He wasn't. Yet. He took a gray plastic bin off the top of a teetering stack and folded his overcoat into it. He took off his suit coat and folded it and laid it on top of the overcoat. It was hot in the prison. Cheaper to burn a little extra oil than to give the inmates 2 sets of clothes, one for the summer and one for the winter. He could hear their noise ahead of him, the clatter of metal and concrete and the random, crazy yells and the screams and the low grumble of other disaffected voices, all muted by dog-legged corridors and many closed doors. He emptied his pants pockets of keys and wallet and cell phone and coins and nested those clean, warm, personal items on top of his suit coat. He picked up the great plastic bin, didn't carry it to the X-ray belt. Instead, he hefted it across the room to a small window in a wall. He waited there, and a woman in uniform took it and gave him a numbered ticket in exchange for it. He braced himself in front of the metal detector hoop. He patted his pockets and glanced ahead, expectantly, as if waiting for an invitation. Learned behavior from air travel. The guards let him stand there for a minute, a small, nervous man in his shirt sleeves, empty-handed. No briefcase, no notebook, not even a pen. He was not there to advise. He was there to be advised. Not to talk, but to listen. And he sure as hell wasn't going to put what he heard anywhere near a piece of paper. The guards beckoned him through. A green light and no beep, but still the first guard wanded him, and the second patted him down. The third escorted him deeper into the complex, through doors designed never to be open unless the last and the next were closed, and around tight corners designed to slow a running man's progress, and past thick green glass windows with watchful faces behind. The lobby had been institutional, with linoleum on the floor and mint-green paint on the walls and fluorescent tubes on the ceiling, and the lobby had been connected to the outside, with gusts of cold air blowing in when the door was opened, and salt stains and puddles of snowmelt on the floor. The prison proper was different. It had no connection to the outside, no sky, no weather, no attempt at decor. It was all raw concrete, already rubbed greasy where sleeves and shoulders had touched it, still pale and dusty where they hadn't. Underfoot was grippy gray paint, like the floor of an auto enthusiast's garage. The lawyer's overshoes squeaked on it. There were 4 interview rooms. Each was a windowless concrete cube, divided exactly in half by a wall-to-wall desk-height counter with safety glass above. Caged lights burned on the ceiling above the counter. The counter was cast from concrete. The grain of the formwork lumber was still visible in it. The safety glass was thick and slightly green and was divided into 3 overlapping panes to give 2 sideways listening slots. The center pane had a cutout slot at the bottom for documents, like a bank. Each half of the room had its own chair and its own door, perfectly symmetrical. The lawyers entered one way, and the inmates entered the other. Later, they left the same way they had come, each to a different destination. The guard opened the door from the corridor and stepped a yard into the room for a visual check that all was as it should be. Then he stood aside and let the lawyer enter. The lawyer stepped in and waited until the guard closed the door behind him and left him alone. Then he sat down and checked his watch. He was 8 minutes late. He had driven slow because of the weather. Normally, he would have regarded it as a failure to be late for an appointment, unprofessional and disrespectful. But prison visits were different. Time meant nothing to prisoners. Another 8 minutes later, the other door opened in the wall behind the glass. A different guard stepped in and checked, and then stepped back out, and a prisoner shuffled in, the lawyer's client. He was white and enormously overweight, marbled with fat and completely hairless. He was dressed in an orange jumpsuit. He had wrist and waist and ankle chains that looked as delicate as jewelry. His eyes were dull, and his face was docile and vacant, but his mouth was moving a little, like a simple-minded person struggling to retain complex information. The door in the wall behind the glass closed. The prisoner sat down. The lawyer hitched his chair close to the counter. The prisoner did the same. Symmetrical. The lawyer said, "I'm sorry I'm late." The prisoner didn't answer. The lawyer asked, "How are you?" The prisoner didn't answer. The lawyer went quiet. The air in the room was hot. A minute later, the prisoner started talking, reciting, working his way through lists and instructions and sentences and paragraphs he had committed to memory. From time to time, the lawyer said, "Slow down a bit." And on each occasion, the guy paused and waited, and then started up again at the head of the previous sentence, with no change in his pace and no alteration to his sing-song delivery. It was as if he had no other way of communicating. The lawyer had what he considered to be a pretty good memory, especially for detail, like most lawyers, and he was paying a lot of attention, because to concentrate on the process of remembering distracted him from the actual content of the instructions he was getting. But even so, some small corner of his mind had counted 14 separate criminal proposals before the prisoner finally finished up and sat back. The lawyer said nothing. The prisoner said, "Got all that?"